You know what I found out? If you're going to use the tape recorder, you don't have to move that at all.
You don't.
You just push this. Well, but if you use the radio, you just have to move it. But it doesn't matter where you put it.
Oh.
So.
Does it make a good sound?
Yeah. Yeah, it makes a good sound. Yeah, it's wet out. Outside? It's wet out. Why?
I want
to
take my letters out, but I don't
want to
walk in the wet.
I'll take them out, or Ken will take them out. Her letters to the mailbox. So, let's see. So this is Meridel, Lesueur, and Rachel talking about about life in the fast path.
In the moon dog.
Life in the fast lane.
Guerrilla life, underground life.
Underground life? Really? I always thought you led such an open life.
You did?
Since I know you. Well, it wasn't a secret life. And there were always a lot of people involved. It wasn't a hidden life.
Well, by the very nature of being a writer and a woman and a radical.
But you never did it secretly. Since I know you, I knew about it.
Well, it was a guerrilla action, against the establishment.
Well, you mean it's like being anti-slavery under slavery?
Yeah, only more pervasive. For example, going to school. When I quit in the freshman school. Oh, even Mary thought that was suicide. You know, what are you going to do without an education? Well, that was a question.
Well, you worried about your kids.
Well, I was going to, well, Fort Scott was not a bourgeois town entirely. But here it was the center of the military and, ruled by an upper-class bankers and owners.
Then we were the radicals.
That in itself, put you, I don't really call it a secret, but underground. Sometimes mothers ran out and took their children so we wouldn't pass them. Or didn't speak to us. Even grandma.
Well, I grew up in that same atmosphere. And it was the same. And and my mother was divorced and my grandmother was divorced and my mother worked, and my grandmother worked, and that wasn't true in my generation. And my family knew all these things that other families didn't. I mean, like in the Depression, the families blamed each other for the Depression, and my family never did that.
Oh, that's a good point.
Nobody got mad at Matt because he didn't have a job. They knew why he didn't have a job. There wasn't that blaming.
That's an important point. But you also had even Arthur, being a former labor judge, was considered a radical. I remember sometimes you were stopped for being a former laborite.
Well, so there is that feeling. I bring it up because there was, like, you were different. And I think that I thought when I was a little girl that we were much more different than we really were.
Yeah.
Because as I got older and older, I mean, everybody's divorced, right? Just about everybody. And so
the women work.
And all the women are working now. And not all, but, you know, I mean, that's not different to be working. And there's all kinds of politics. So that what I thought that, you know, we were so different, we weren't that different. And that's been real important to know, you know, and I think it's really true. Like the woman who asked me how it is to have you for a mother. Well, how would I know? I mean, you know, your mother is your mother. And you don't know how it would be to have anybody else for a mother. You only know how it is to have your own mother. And you don't, you know, and it's probably pretty much the same as everybody else's mother.
Well, I don't know. Your mother did. I didn't. We didn't always have a good place to live.
But a lot of people don't. I always thought we did have a good place to live.
Now, you all were very, very old, very kind.
No, I mean, we didn't. If you don't know, you know, that it's any different, we always had a place to live.
Poor people said they didn't know they were poor.
We always had food. We were never hungry.
I can't breathe that, dear. I have to go back. I'll go and you finish your cigarette, okay?
No, I put it out.
I just have trouble breathing. Anyway.
I mean, you know, children don't worry about money like parents do.
Yeah, I often think of my mother and my grandmother, how poor we were. But I think they were wrong never to let us know that the next meal was hard to get come by. I think we were really that poor in Oklahoma.
But then you would have been scared, I suppose.
I don't know. I think it's been. I try to make Mac and Winston feel about what those two women did, you know, those two dollar women, those two little boys. They don't have any idea of anything they did, or it was heroic, or they didn't conclude them. I was included somewhat because of, I don't know.
You were a girl.
Suppose. I mean, I got the letters from my father. These people were here the other day from the farm. They wanted to know how you did with your children as radicals. But, you know, they go to a country school, and then they begin to get all the things about having things, and of course they don't see it. They don't take them to the farm struggle. But so do you take them to the farm? He was one of the leaders of the farm struggle. Did you talk to him at all? An amazing person.
But yeah.
He's fallen out. He's gotten. I feel badly about him. He was such a. Well, he said all those people have disappeared. Do you think there were 17,000 people appeared in Iowa only a year ago? Where are they? I wish you'd go to having a meeting in Mason City next month. Stover. I'd like to go. No, Terrence can't go out. But I wouldn't be surprised if he appeared there.
Clarence?
He always did.
So you were born in 1900, February 22nd, 1900, in Murray, Iowa. And your mother's name was Marion Burfield Wharton. No, Marion Lucy Wharton LeSueur. And your father's name was William Winston Wharton.
A preacher.
They both went to Drake University. And your mother was a Greek and Latin scholar, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. People talked about her years afterwards, how brilliant she was. And you couldn't take any of those things at Drake. You could only take the domestic sciences.
But she did.
No, she didn't take them. She couldn't take them.
Well, how'd she learn them?
And then I went to that alumni meeting, you know, with Mr. Wharton, what, in 1950 or something?
Mm-hmm.
And they all told about how she did all their problems, the mathematics, what a brilliant woman she was. She's She couldn't take them.
Well, she did take courses in Greek and Latin, though.
I don't.
Because she used to tell me about it.
Maybe she took them secretly.
And she died. She put a dyed her hair red and ran off to Chicago. Do you remember that? Why'd she do that?
Well, I understood her brothers were terrible. She's had a terrible life at home. Her brothers were awful. They brought in her.
Is that when they lived in Illinois?
Mm-hmm. They brought in her cut toenails and gave them to her boyfriend. Remember how Mac was like, they made her life miserable. That was before Daisy, I guess. How much older was she than Daisy?
Maybe she was 10 years older. I don't know. Mac was younger than Granny, right? Frank was the oldest. And then...
Frank and Mac.
Mac was older?
Well, I don't know. Frank was the oldest. And then came Mac, and then married, and then Daisy. Because there was a little boy
Wasn't 10 years.
Little boy that died in the car.
Well, Daisy died in 46. Granny died in 54. I don't know.
Well, they had gone to Iowa when Granny and Daisy were born in. In Bedford, Iowa.
Well, that's where Marion was born, wasn't it? So, did Marion grow up in Bedford, Iowa? Or where'd they go then? Well, they were itinerant.
Well, see, that's just near Murray.
I think they got a farm.
Well, Bedford's way on the east.
Not way. Away. It's just a
pretty far east.
There from Shenandoah. No, that was earlier than that. I don't know what happened. When they went to Murray. They were always losing their farm.
Well, Murray was the Wardens. It wasn't your grandmother.
It was her farm.
Well, he went there as the preacher for the church. That wasn't even a farmhouse you lived in.
The farm was there, and the house is gone, but the farm is still there. She inherited those farms.
And didn't she come to stay with her daughter to have the baby?
That was her house. Mr. Wharton didn't have anything.
That was the preacher's house that the church owned.
I don't think so. It was Grandma's house. She was the only
it was near the church. That was the church. The house that the church had for the preacher. They had to furnish a house for their preacher.
Well, yes, it's a good time.
Okay, so then when you were born, your mother had a baby who died before you. That's hard to get born.
Yeah, I think it affected my whole life. She told me I couldn't die.
Right.
I can even remember leaning over my cradle with her black Medusa hair and saying, you can't leave it, you can't die, you can't. I'm watching for every...
Well, she must have been scared to death.
Yeah. Then, of course, Mr. Wharton was mad that it wasn't a boy. He blamed her that his boy died. Funny, I went back there. They're all buried in Jacksonville.
Well, who's all?
The Whartons.
Well, not him, though.
And I remember I went there with my father to put a stone on little Joe's grave, but it was gone.
Oh. You were a little girl?
Yeah, all of us were marked. Joseph Wharton. What was her name? Mrs. Wharton. And their son died also. Aaron Wharton, but little Joe's stone was not there. I don't know who would come and take it. Yeah, well, that's pretty hard. But then she had 4 years between all of her children.
Yeah.
That's a bad thing. You got a little child.
Except you were only not you came right after, almost right after the death of that baby.
I think so.
Within a year, I think.
Then Winston was born 4 years later. Mac was born 4 years after that.
Right. So when you left Murray, where did you go? Oklahoma?
We went back to Illinois. I think we went to Bloomington. He got a church in Bloomington.
Then
Winston was very sick every winter, almost died of pneumonia. The doctor said we had to get to a warmer climate, so then we went to San Antonio.
But Winston was born in Oklahoma.
Well, that may always been where her mother was. I don't know why. She went down to her mother's place.
To have the baby.
Had a farm in Oklahoma. The house of that is gone, too. It was outside of Perry. Yeah, she always went where her mother. Well, my grandma was not a mother. I mean, she was not a person who'd take care of you. She wasn't a mother.
Like me.
Well, you're a mother. Yes, you are. Well, I think she had a great deal of sympathy, but it didn't come out. Her body was so rigid and so protective and so on. Well, I never could get Mary to express her feeling that she had for her Christian. Grandma never went with Mary in her radicalism or her sexual freedom.
But she was for the vote.
Vote, yeah.
Your grandmother. She worked for that, didn't she? Why was she for the vote? What did she...
Well, if you wanted to vote, I'll liquor.
Oh.
She thought everything was liquor. Men would be... Everything would be good if men didn't drink. That was, well, I think Mark Lucy was an alcoholic.
He died as a pretty young man.
He died of an alcoholic liver.
But he wasn't old. He didn't live to be old. Like she did. She lived to be old.
She lived all her life after he died. She never looked at another person, a man.
And she was real active in her church. Did she like Mr. Wharton?
Well, she had a kind of a Rabelaisian quality. She liked Frank because he was a rascal. And I think she kind of liked Mr. Wharton because she used to tell me that he was seen in Mexico with another woman and all of his escapades. She seemed to have an admiration. But I think that Mark Lucy was that way.
But he was a preacher. She would have liked that he was a preacher.
Well, preachers were rascals. I mean, you had to be a rascal to be a preacher, almost. Like Homer T. Wilson was one of the great rascals of the world. He was head of the church in Texas, in Southwest. He gave Marion her chance to talk with him. Yeah, Granny had a funny thing. And Mrs. Wharton had the same kind of thing, a kind of covert interest in sensuality. They never got to practice it. Mrs. Wharton was a real covert sensualist. She'd tell you awful stories and grin the most pornographic grin. And then she had a coterie of old Christian women. And then she brought up there the black slaves to Jacksonville, so they all lived there. Probably they were her half-sisters and brothers. So she went around with them, you know, and she's really a very, I never got to know her because Marion hated her so that much. She was a very sensual woman. Well, she was a southerner. She was a southern woman. She came from a plantation in Virginia. She wasn't a Puritan. Of course, she married this. Straight up, Mr. Wharton was a straight Puritan there ever was when he leaned over backwards.
What was her last name, do you know?
I think it was
McGavern? Was it McGavern?
Mrs. Wharton? No, that was on the Lucy side. It was Brown or something like that. I think it was Brown. They had a big plantation in Virginia. And then the blacks that she brought with her all had her name. She never hid it.
Well, but that was very common for slaves to take the last name of the owners. That was the practice.
You had to bring them up to a Puritan village. They're just like bringing an Indian. And she was a strange woman. She played poker. You weren't supposed to play she had a secret poker group.
Of women?
She started an old woman's home in order to have, I think in order to have all these women there. She told me, she said, never, never take off your clothes in front of anyone. And she was leering at me as she said this. Not even your mother. I said, not even your mother? Because Mary was always walking around naked, which was a real horrible thing for the family. You always had to watch out.
You didn't encounter her on the wall or nothing. Stark naked. And that was a sin.
This was Mrs. Wharton told you that, or your other grandmother?
Mrs. Wharton.
And she told dirty stories to you, you know. She had a whole bunch of stories. A lot of them about defecation and stuff like that.
Well, didn't your grandma Lucy tell you not to take off your clothes, too?
Oh, yeah, she never took off her clothes.
Did she tell you not to?
I don't remember her telling me that, but you never did.
What'd she tell you about men?
Men?
She didn't talk about them?
How horrible they were. They had this terrible affliction, and they couldn't help it.
What did your mother tell you about men?
She gave me a book, whatever your girl should know. She didn't really talk about it either. I tried to talk about sex with Mary when she was 76. I don't think she knew very much about it. She never heard the word orgasm. Of course, nobody ever heard that word there.
Well, those things weren't said out loud then.
Well, you didn't talk about anything like that. In fact, you weren't supposed to admit having pleasure. But Grandma just thought this was some... But she didn't blame men. She just thought it was some terrible disease they had, this terrible thing they couldn't control. Well, I imagine Mark Lucy was a charming Irishman, you know, verbal, charming. He was noted as a brilliant criminal lawyer, but he always had the poor. Grandma never forgave him for that. She went to his funeral, strangely enough, in Missouri. The only thing she told me was that they were lined up along the course to the cemetery, all these ragged and poor people he had defended. That was his. The hearse just went between.
Lined up, she described it.
Well, he was a friend of Ingersoll's, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, Grandma never told any stories. I don't know whether she didn't remember or what. But he used to bargain with her. If Ingersoll could come for dinner, he'd come for dinner with her preachers. Because he never came when the preachers came. You were supposed to have the preachers on Sunday. Supposed to feed him. He would never come, so if Ingersoll sit at their table, he would sit with the preachers.
So she did.
Yeah, and then what? Then he would do jokes. Like one time at a Sunday dinner, he had a huge pot, a chamber pot, in the middle of the table, full of molasses with donuts floating on the top. He would do things like that.
Oh, wonderful. Now you know where Winston came from.
I don't know, I never heard Grandma tell hardly any stories about any people, describe people? Well, I don't know what kind of a life she has. The one daughter of the Indian woman and her father in this town, where nobody to speak to her mother. Holly only had one daughter, one child, I don't know. I asked my grandmother that one time, and she kind of leered. She said, a greased egg never hatches. So all they had was Vaseline or something like that.
Yeah.
I think she probably had a number of abortions.
How?
From her feeling about them.
Women gave themselves abortions.
What was her feeling about them?
Oh, she'd always have some terrible disgust.
Awful, almost frightened.
About abortions?
Abortions went along, and many people died of them. Abortion was a secret thing that went on in the village. You took castor oil, or you tried to pierce it here, and with some. Lots of women died. Of course, if you got poisoned, there was no place you could go, no doctor, but there was no hospital. I never saw a hospital, but we went to Topeka. I was 17 or 18. Oh, no, how old was I went to Topeka? I don't know.
12. About 12.
I was going to school there. We had the first house with plumbing we had in Topeka, and a toilet.
Maybe you were like 10.
That was before Fort Scott. Of course, Grandma had no sympathy with being a socialist. She really had a hard time.
How did your mother get to be a socialist?
Well, you probably heard her tell about San Antonio when she went into business.
Yeah.
And she had this strange hunchback lawyer who was a radical. He was a brilliant lawyer. I guess he was a racketeer lawyer. But a brilliant, very wonderful man. He was kind of a hunchback. He was very short. A large head. And he kind of educated Marion. And she had this friend, this woman, who had also left her husband. And they kind of went into business. They began in real estate. They were trying to find out how they made money. They soon found out you didn't make money working. Can you give me a little more of that?
I'm putting more on.
You know, they found out by Carrie that you didn't make money in a job. And that was more true of women. There wasn't any jobs for women. So they were looking for ways to become entrepreneurs. They did. She was a lawyer, this other woman. I don't know how she could be a lawyer, but she was. I don't remember what she looked like. I don't remember her name. And they began to buy up real estate, buy things. They bought a pecan factory, where they used child labor. Did you hear this before?
Not this part, no.
And they bought this factory. They used child labor. They picked the pecans, the meats out of the pecans.
Yeah. They're
supposed to pick them out whole. And she would go up to this lawyer, for his advice, and he did all the legal work for them. So she went up there and said, the conditions here are terrible. You're hiring children and paying them nothing. And he said, that's capitalism. He said, you've discovered capitalism. And that's where it began, I think. That capitalism is built upon the exploitation of labor. And that's the only way you can make money.
So yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
began to. Then she met up with another strange man who had a map for a gold mine. And she went out. She went out with him to find this gold mine. I'll never forget him. He wore white linen clothes. And they went out in the desert, you know, with this map. But they never found it. And then she became a theosophist. She began to read and study.
Yeah.
And she became a theosophist. She believed in reincarnation. And she became a Mrs. Annie Besant. And there was a theosophical school in San Antonio. And then he gave her a socialist literature, and then this lawyer. And I guess he had a group, and she began to attend a group of studying socialism. And women, women had no rights at all in Texas. They couldn't have property. They had no rights to their children. They had no job rights. So she became interested in that. I mean, actually, my father thought it was awful, but as he told me later, she read all those books. That's what ruined her.
Right.
He said, "I haven't read a book since I left Drake." Which I imagine was true.
Except the Bible.
I don't know if he even read that.
Well, he had all the flowers in his yard that grew in Jerusalem.
Oh, he was a devout, simple. You believe you meet your dead in heaven, you meet Jesus. Jesus was your Savior. He was mistaken for Jesus when he was young. He looked like him. He looked like the pictures of Jesus. He wore a little beard like Jesus. And yet he was, he was a sensualist too. He drank and womanized and lied and stole. He got all his money from women. In Texas, you could marry a woman. You married her, then everything became yours. He married a woman with a big hotel,
for example. And that was in his name. Then he framed her. Of course, you could get a divorce. A man could get a divorce. A woman couldn't. He framed her with another man to have drowned
and divorced her and had the hotel. He was living in the hotel. There, he became a rich man.
Well, that's why she left him, isn't it?
Why the mother left him?
He took her money out of her bank account.
Yeah, he could even take her wages if she had a job.
But she went to the bank and he'd taken out all her money.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that why she left him? That was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back?
It wasn't why, but
it was the final thing, wasn't it?
It was really his escapades with women and his drinking. And she couldn't. And when Mac was born, she decided it was immoral to have a child by a man you didn't love. So she never slept with him again. And of course, that was terrible. You could have a woman arrested. You don't realize what a terrible thing that was to women. You couldn't, you had no rights of any kind. A man could frame you with another lover, and the police would come and arrest you. Testify in court. Now he got this big hotel. God knows what happened to the women. I don't know what happened to them. Then he married another woman. He had a farm up here with a woman with two boys. Back in Winston, used to go there in the summer. She had a big farm.
Where?
In somewhere in Wisconsin. She got out of Texas. Now, Mary was a real searcher. She was a wonderful, I mean, she was hunting. She had to read herself out of the church. That was not easy. I mean, she was raised as a Christian with all these beliefs of sin and hell. So even she went to the university in Chicago before little Joe was born. And they had a famous minister who taught other religions and broke with the Christian orthodoxy, had a course at the Chicago University on comparative religions, where he taught Buddhism and showed there were other religions besides the Christian and even better ones. And she went there pregnant before little Joe was born and took that course. First time she ever heard that there were other religions, there were other believers and other cultures. Then she became an editor of one of the Christian magazines from that course. And I had a story, I don't know where it is, you know, a story that was, I showed it to you, I think, taken from the magazine that she wrote. She became one of the editors of that. Of course, Mr. Warden thought that was awful, you know, go with the left wing. It was the left wing of the church, I'd say. And he thought that was, you know, but you could go to hell. You know, they didn't believe lightly that you could have a break with the orthodoxy. You were a sinner, and you were a sinner. It's literally true, probably, that Mr. Warden never read a book, you know, that was any kind of a criticism. There was a Christian, the left wing had a Christian, what was it called? Christian something or other. It was a radical Christian. Well, the left wing break with the orthodox. But to read that paper was a sin. You would go to hell for just reading that paper. Then, of course, Mr. Warden thought this editor of this paper was making love to her. You know, every time she had a meeting with him. She was a beautiful woman. I think she's about one of the most beautiful women I've ever looked at.
Your mother?
Uh-huh. At that period, isn't it? And all those 20 years of them. I mean, she had such a drive, you know, she was really like a Joan of Arc, you know, such a drive to find out the truth, to live. Because I don't know what, she must have had a terrible, terrible sexual struggle, you know, to accept sex. I don't know how. Mr. Warden must have been a real sexual partner. She married him because he was so physical and so handsome. He was handsome. They were both handsome. Just to walk between them, I used to feel great. People used to stop and look at him. You know, physically, they were so magnificent. Their bodies, they were tall. I told you one, did I, meeting this wonderful man at this alumnus meeting who was in love with Mary, he said, the first thing he said to me, I should have been your father. Can I tell you about him?
Yeah.
He was head of the Roosevelt thing in the South, I forget what it was called, the economics of the South, Southern. NRA or something like that. He was a beautiful man. He had a crippled son. He said, I couldn't compete with that handsome Willie Wharton. Mr. Warren was also the great athlete of Drake. He started football in the Middle West. she was really a searching woman.
Then she was searching sexually. Well, in those days, you know, you could tell what a real woman was living with by her belief. The only way she could learn was to live with a man. I mean, you know, you'd live with an anarchist and you'd
find out all he knew. Then you'd live with a socialist. I mean, her affair with Alexander Berkman, for example, that there she was a passionate anarchist for a while. Men fell in love with her. It was terrible. It was ridiculous. I mean, they were just out of their minds. I used to go around and hold their hands when she turned them over. And then she really was a searching woman. Love with this poet, Billy Williams. Well, I asked this young man to hunt up in the Kansas City Star. He was a wonderful man. I got all my education from her lovers. True, it was true. I don't know how that happened, but I went to Kansas City and spent the summer with Billy Williams.
Who was the one that had them? The health thing in Chicago.
McFadden.
Bernard McFadden.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing, this woman down in San Antonio. They became followers of McFadden. Because Marion was very interested in nutrition after her baby died. She studied that. He was great. He turned America, you know, from the hog to the vegetable. People don't even have ever heard of him. He had all those big magazines.
Physical culture. That was
it. He really affected American was hog eaters, and you know, they were really in the dark about it. So she and this woman, that was the first big money they made.
They had the meeting for him in San Antonio.
Keep talking, I'll be right back. Pretend I'm here. Go on.
Oh.
Keep talking.
So they had this big, he was going to have a little affair, and they rented the auditorium and had this enormous thing from Bernard McFadden. It was an enormous meeting. It was thousands came. And so from that, they started a physical culture school for women, where they came and had exercise like now, and diet and all those things.
Did you go there?
Yeah. And I studied all that. They were the teachers.
But did you go by yourself?
To the school?
Uh-huh.
No.
You didn't?
I don't know if they had it for young people or not. It was for women mostly.
I thought you went.
Oh, in Chicago?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
By yourself?
Yeah, well, that was later. McFadden had gone to England. He wanted to marry Marion and take her to England and have a big contest about having a baby and having it raised on eggshells, she used to say. But she wasn't into having another child, so he married another woman for her.
She always said he didn't want to take her children.
No.
And she wouldn't leave her children.
Well, that was one of the reasons, but the other one was he offered to send us to school the rest of our lives. So then he had this McFadden school in Chicago. That's where he sent me there.
Yeah? Who? In San Antonio they started the school. Well, isn't that what Mr. Wharton took all the money from?
Then he got really angry because, you know, they were independent then. to have somebody that leave.
That's the problem.
Yeah, they had a big house there, and she left the dishes on the table and everything, so we wouldn't know we had left. So we took a train. When Mac was just a baby. I don't think he walked yet.
Even when Arthur came up here with Mary, and she was open
heel for the men in the non-promising league. And they all tried to sleep with her. You know, she hadn't married him yet. No, a woman was really open. It was really...
I thought they got married in Fort Scott. Where'd they get married? Oh, they got married in Montana. In Butte, Montana. Pocatello.
Oh.
Pocatello, Montana.
What are they doing up there?
I don't know, but that's where they got married.
Well, even Arthur didn't expect Mary to stay with him for more than a year. He used to tell her not to send out her charms for some witless men that came to dinner. She was all back. He believed that any man in the world would fall for her, which was probably true. They were in Chicago at a hotel at some meeting, and Mary went out for a walk with Carl Sandburg. And when she came back, Arthur had his things all packed. That was the end.
So then you started listening to what people said.
I didn't go into people.
What was happening to you during that? You were in San Antonio. You were just a little, real little girl.
The only thing that I had about Mary's things was that every time she fell in love with anybody, I was dropped, which was true.
Oh, so you didn't like her?
I was jealous.
Mm-hmm.
I felt hurt. Arthur and I went to meet her on Chautauqua one time in Missouri. We got to be with her and meet her and drive from one Chautauqua to another or something. Arthur had a car. And we were going in one, and I was sitting in the back, and they were sitting in front, and paying no attention to me, whatever. I mean, she would really fall in love with absolutely everything. Like Deborah falls in love with him, and she just abandoned everything. So they stopped across a creek, and I got out of the car, and I thought, you know, they'd miss me and come back after me, and they didn't notice me getting out. I sat there all day. They didn't miss me till they got to the next town, which was hours later. So I did. That was a. But she was really. And then when she parted from them, I was her confidant. And you know, she came weeping and telling me all about it. And I was supposed to understand the whole thing. That's the most powerful feeling that I had. Then when she went to New York, became an anarchist. I lived with Alexander Berkman. I thought she'd never come back. I think my grandmother did too. Even to my grandmother, Berkman was Satan. She left the house when he came there. Imagine in the city where he was walking up and down, you know, from her house and her daughter. She never came to any kind of, after she gave up her job and her work, she was kind of dependent on Marion. She came to take care of her children. She couldn't go back to anything. Marion took care of her to the end of her days. I don't even know how. She didn't have any money.
Well, when did you start listening to people talking in the streets? Where were you?
Fort Scott.
Fort Scott. So you were a teenager already.
I was 10 or 11. No, I wasn't a teenager. I was 12.
12?
Couldn't be more than 12.
And what did you hear?
I heard about the farmers.
What did you hear? Them telling stories about what they were doing or what?
Well, the farm situation was like now, always going in and out, complete destruction and loss of land.
So were they talking in the taverns or where were they talking?
No, in the square. Fort Scott had a huge square with a water trough. Saturday, everybody came in. That was the square where John Brown organized a raid into Missouri. I didn't know that until later. But place, a hotel where you, a rooming house where you stayed. Well, of course, the Socialist Party gave you a feeling for the people. I mean, you know, they, the people's college, that's what it was, education for the lowest people, the real proletariat, the real farmers. So I really got it from that. They came to the people's college from Missouri, Arkansas. There's always some of them there. In fact, they were going to turn it into a college that you attended. There was a correspondence. The war hadn't come along, they probably turned it into a... It was the biggest correspondence.
Did you take any classes there?
Oh, sure. You sit in on all kinds of classes, history especially. And Marion had this English class.
Workers English, it was called. I probably got my sense of using language for the working class. Well, it was really, you know, Arthur wrote workers' law.
You know, they didn't use any of the class laws, the middle class. Workers' law, workers' English, workers' history. They really had, there was no books they had to write. Who'd write them? And that's how one of the reasons Little Blue Book started there. Marion started Little Blue
Book. So what did you hear? Can you remember things you heard?
I heard everything about the working class. You didn't hear that in high school. You were only hearing how to be a success in the middle class. That's why I quit. I quit as a freshman. I never went back in Fort Scott. So I had a whole orientation towards the struggles of the world. They studied the whole, you know, the whole revolutionary struggles of the world, and the economics of the farm, of the country, capitalism. We didn't learn what capitalism was. We didn't even call them capitalists. No, that was a terrific for thousands of people. Those courses went all over. I think Marion wrote a whole book on workers' English, on, you know, with all the quotes and from working class quotes. It was a tremendous thing. And Arthur, of course, that there she learned the basics of socialism. He of course was a basic socialist theoretician. North Dakota, he was the main theoretician of the nonpartisan league in North Dakota. Went around teaching in the squares and the schoolhouses and the... I think Mary became a theoretician from Arthur. So did I. Arthur, you know, wrote articles of the Nation, New Republic. He was considered the sort of theoretical father. He taught Debs the theory of.
During World War I, when you were a teenager, and your family didn't support the war, right? Your family didn't think the United States should get into the war, and supported Debs, and you were part of the socialist school there. And I suppose a lot of people in the town did support the war, right? Well, at first they didn't. And then it turned around. What was happening with you then?
Well, as I say, we didn't go in the middle class.
But you went to school.
When I went to school, I was considered just about like a prostitute. They used to knock on our door in Fort Scott, my grandmother.
Well, you had friends in school, though.
Not
what about the Indian
daughter?
Well, what about the Indian through. I mean, you had some friends.
That was in Perry. I never knew any. I didn't have any friends, and they were socialists. We had, they were great socialist people there. There was socialist clubs, and, you know, the whole city was, I don't know how many, but there was, you know, there was
a community.
Community, yeah. We never associated. They didn't associate with us.
Who?
The community. I mean,
but there was a socialist community there.
Yeah, but not physically in the town. You know, they didn't own the property or the bank. So
yeah, but they
churches.
Were. But those
Grandma,
were the people you knew.
Grandma also kept in with the church. I don't know how they accepted her just as a sad woman who had this terrible daughter. I sometimes went with her to church. In fact, I got baptized.
In Fort Scott?
I don't know. I think it was Fort Scott. So we did have some in the church, even off, sometimes the church ladies, you know, had their meetings at our house. It was a very nice house. They must have given her a hard time, but they accepted her. But she was a big figure in the church. In the, what was called the, the WCTU. She was head of the WCTU in Oklahoma. And then she was belonged to the foreign mission, it was called. Foreign mission? So you helped women in India, sent boxes of clothes and stuff. Foreign mission, it was called. Mr. Horton's uncle was a famous missionary to India, Lawrence Horton. And he started the hospitals in India. When he came back here, he was a great figure in the church. And a great friend of mine. He always came to see Nettie. And I used to unveil his picture. Sunday school. He was a really, you know, really sincere Christian. He found out in India that what they needed more in the churches was hospitals, so he started to build hospitals. The grandma supported a hospital in India and belonged to all that. She went to the national convention. But I didn't, the bourgeoisie was an enemy.
So you didn't have any friends that you talked with about all this?
Only socialists.
Well, but then they were your friends, so tell me about that.
Oh, we had a socialist youth group. Youth groups.
And what'd you do?
We cleaned our plates because the Armenians were starving.
What else?
And we had socialist study groups. We had picnics. We had dances. Dancing was taboo in grandma's culture. The dancing.